work on it. And you can't know you're working on meekness unless you're in a situation where you have to be meek. And that's unfortunate. Maybe we're not where we need to be when we have this fruit of the Spirit. Remember last Sunday we talked about that meekness is a fruit of the Spirit. So if you don't know that you're operating in it and you're pretty good at it, you'll be able to tell when the situation comes. And when it does, and you hadn't shown that fruit of the Spirit, which is meekness, then what do? You work on it. Remember, we got all of these three, poverty of spirit, mourn, and meekness, have to be mastered. We gotta get that, because everything that you see here, even though it represents others in our life that we're going to have to show these, but first of all, these are toward God. So that should be like the help. That's what I was saying on Sunday. This should be the help of our life. It's toward Him. So before you can show any of these toward man, you first have to, when do you practice? When you practice toward God. That's who you practice with. And if you don't practice toward God, you're not going to be any good at being meek to man. You're just not going to. Because you fail to practice when it's important. The passions are fiery and headstrong. How many know passions get fiery? How many know there's people that maybe you've met, they have a fiery passion? Some people maybe they're not so passionate about it. And sometimes when you're not as passionate, they might even make this statement. They're more meek about the situation. But situation has an ability to bring out passion. And maybe your passion is fiery. Whatever that may be the case, we have to work, because meekness gives check to them. Whatever our passions are. What is meekness? It's the thing that checks everything. At the end of the day, maybe you had this whatever encounter, but at the end of the day, you had a little time to not be as passionate about it and are upset, and then you thought about it. You gave it some thought. Well, when you're giving it thought, that's you're working with yourself. You're trying to make sense of what just happened in your mind. And how does it settle in your heart? The believer at that moment is going to have an encounter with God. You see, and then we're going to go through this process. Do I know how to be poor in spirit? Do I recognize that regardless if in this situation that I think I'm right? Right now, this moment, is not whether I'm right or wrong. It's whether or not, how do I see myself in the presence of God? And do I see myself as a person who's transgressed the commandments of God? If that's the case, then I mourn. And then meekness comes. I got to realize that the situation that I just got in, was that for me or someone else? If I'm serving the Lord, am I okay with that? Remember the story I read about David? And David says, they were throwing stones, they were cussing at him and everything. He said, listen, hey, I know you want to go out and fight for me. You want to go beat him up. I can go take his life for you, David. He said, but if Yahweh gave him permission to do what he's doing to me, I'm going to accept that is something I did in my life that brought this on. I'm not 100% clean in this situation. There's got to be something that I did that brought it on. Regardless if I did or didn't. If this is Yahweh, then let him curse. Remember, we talked about that. That's important because this deals with how we react in these that are toward Him, toward Yahweh. Meekness bridles the mouth. Now, the mouth's out of control. Don't think you can control it. You can't tame it. I can't tame it. Nobody can tame the mouth. But meekness is the thing that bridles it. Let me tell you, a lot of folks, we got to learn this fruit of the Spirit. We really do, because God, if you want God to deal with you, He can't deal with somebody who won't at least let meekness be the bridle of the mouth. Because you and I, on our best, we can't tame our mouth. You know, He says, like a ship. The ship is big in comparison to the rudder. Right? How many have ever seen that? Big ship, small rudder. But if you turn that rudder, either way, what happens to the ship? It turns. He compares that in the Scripture, that's how we are. Your tongue's like a rudder. It can really guide what's going to happen in your life throughout the day. You can turn a big situation to be good or bad by just what you say. It could have been an explosive blow up of whatever is going on in our life just because I wouldn't let my tongue be bridled by meekness. You know what prevents most people from operating in this fruit of the Spirit, meekness? They always ask, when are they going to do it? But these four are not about them as yet. Even though we've been given practical application on how we operate in these toward man, primarily the first thing is toward God. So we can ask all the questions about them and they, but the bottom line is how God sees you in operation of these. This is very important. It ties the tongue, talking about this meekness as a bridle to the mouth, it ties the tongue to its good behavior. So innately, inside of us, we have the capacity to do good things. If we are now born again and our life is changed, that's the things we should lean heavily toward. And this is important when you look at this. It ties the tongue to its good behaviors. Meekness observes that motto. It observes it. It takes it into consideration. It wants to perform at that level. That's what meekness does. It bears, remember this? It bears and forbears. We ought to try that one on some days. Bears and forbears. It's a tough spot. But we got to work on it. We really do. There are four things opposite to meekness, and those was, let me just give you some of the things that were said when we read in the Scripture. Last week we talked about this. But I as a deaf man heard not. You remember that? I as a deaf man heard not. I was as if I had been deaf and did not hear them or know what they were about. Sometimes it's better to just say, I'm not going to hear what's being said. Think about that. Even though you hear it, you got to choose whether you're going to participate or make a comment. I took no notice of what they did any more than if I had not heard them. So just say you didn't hear them and you was deaf, so you didn't even comprehend what was said. When you operate in meekness, you're gonna act that way sometimes. You're not gonna let it affect you. And it's a decision that's conscious that you make that I'm not going to allow that to happen. And so it'll try. It'll try its best to do that. That is, he did not reply to them. So how you reply is going to be a direct result of how you take it. How do you take it? Well, in David's case here, and this is what we're talking about, in David's case, his own people came out to curse him and was against him. But the way he took it was, if Yahweh allowed this, if the bidding was from Yahweh, who am I to fight it? Why would I fight it? If Yahweh wanted it stopped, he could stop it. But obviously, from my learning, maybe, you ever considered that? For my instruction, for what I need to learn by this situation, it's going on. What am I going to operate in? Meekness. Why? Because it's toward God first. It's toward my Elohim. Yahweh deserves my behavior operates in that fruit of the Spirit. That's the only way he knows. Are we operating in the fruit of the Spirit? Do we have love, joy, peace, long-suffering? Is that meekness there? Is it there? It needs to be. We can't pick the one we are as our favorite and just operate one all the time. And it's very important that we understand it. He did not become angry. He was as calm and patient as if they had said nothing. Remember that. They had said nothing. Calm and patient. Well, can we learn from that? Calm and patient. You think that's easy? It's not easy. But it's a great principle. Sometimes you just got to be calm about it. You think that's just going to... Well, I'm just kind of a calm person. So that means that everybody's not doesn't have calmness? See, we want to put it where some people got it and some don't. We got to work on this. We're going to operate in that level if we choose to do that and allow God to develop that in our life. It's going to come forth. It's going to be a characteristic. It's going to be a trait. It's what's going to happen. And I was as a dumb man that opened not his mouth. Think about that. As if I were a man that could not speak, I was perfectly silent under all this persecution. Wow. Think about that. So this has been, and you can read that in 2 Samuel chapter 16. You want to mark that down, 2 Samuel chapter 16, verse 10 and 11. It's a great, you got to read this. This encounter right here shows and proves that if we want God, if we want to express this to Yahweh, he'll come through for us. Because they're going to be some, you want it at the end of the situation where people say it was just God that they was able to even not say anything. That's a great testimony for the Lord God. But to say something, you eliminate God in the entire picture. Not a good place. We don't want to do that. David's grief over what he has done wrong has left him feeling as if he deserved all that is being said about him, even though much of it is not true. What was being said about David was not true. He just let it just flowed. He was fine. He does not speak out and say it's not true because he feels as if he deserves to be punished. If Elohim would punish him, then these enemies will punish him for Elohim. And that's how he accepted that. He is willing to endure any punishment to get rid of this guilt. And he was under some strain of guilt. But he said, Lord, when I look at what I've done, what helped him in meekness? What helped him to be meek? He understood he was poverty stricken when he stood before God. He was still mourning over his sin. Remember, David transgressed against God, and then he was able to withstand and operate in this meekness. Very important. How eminently true was this of our Yeshua Messiah? And I want you to see this. Isaiah 53, verse 7. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. Well, we think, well, he just, you know, he didn't need to really open his mouth because he had to die for us. Listen, the man Christ, the Messiah, he understood that he had to operate in meekness because he could have defended himself. Think about that. If you have access to a bailout, would you take it? Now, who could have bailed out Yeshua more stronger than his own father, Yahweh? And he had access to Yahweh. There was nothing impeding him whatsoever. He had full access to all the power and authority that Yahweh could bring, and he can bring some real authority, especially to the earth. Because the earth had sinned against God. The only thing the earth deserved was God's wrath come upon it. And Yeshua had access to that. Did he ask for it? No, he didn't ask for that. He could have, but he didn't ask for that. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. Meekness. He was brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb. The sheep don't know what's going on. They're going to walk them in there, they all following one another. All of a sudden, the big old shears come out, and they strip them down. Sheep walking around with no wool on, saying, I didn't know what they were about to do. Before I knew it, they was all up on me, cut it all off. Sheep, listen, before her shearers is dumb. That's what it says. I'm just reading the Bible. So he opened not his mouth. So sometimes you're going to look dumb. Nobody in here wants to be dumb. We don't want to be the dummy. We want to be the man. We want to be the one that is highlighted. But sometimes you're going to feel like you're the dummy. Meekness. You're tapping into it. I don't want to do that. Well, Yeshua did. That was part of his qualifications. He did it. I'm just reading what it says. He, Yeshua, is brought as a lamb to the slaughter. Well, you are following who I'm talking about here. And as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, so he, Yeshua, opened not his mouth. Just stood there like a dummy. See, we don't want to see that because that we want to. He stood there because he was strong. Well, he, listen, he was up against it. Because if he wanted it, he could have accessed everything his father had and got rid of all of them in an instant. But he operated in this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful gift that was given to him called a fruit of the Spirit, meekness. It's absolutely incredible. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 23. Who, when he reviled not again. When he was reviled, he reviled not again. Man, it's hard to learn that one. If you push me, I'm going to push you. If you hit me, I'm going to hit you. We grow up in that society. You curse me, I'm going to curse you. You take from me, I'm going to take back from you. Tip for tat. That's the way the society is. It's like somehow we got to be even Stevens in order to feel good about ourselves. Ain't no way I can feel good about myself if somehow I come up short and you got more than I did. You taught that. You taught that from a very young age. That's how it is. And we don't realize we teach our children that. One for you, one for me. One for you, one for me. Their whole life they think they're supposed to get everything even Steven. The way it is in sports today. Even if you lose, you get a trophy. That's craziness. We're not training and teaching anybody anything. He said, who when he was reviled? He reviled not again. He's trying to teach us some heavenly principles here. Let God fight your battle. Show meekness. When he suffered, he threatened not. Oh, you're going to see. You're going to see one of these days, you're going to get it. He suffered. He didn't try to bring in everybody else to suffer with him. Think about it. But committed himself to him who judged rightly. Maybe we ought to try that on. Just commit ourselves to the Father who judged rightly. He knows what's happening. Listen, if Yahweh thought for a second that Yeshua could have went through this without suffering that type of rejection, he would have stopped it. But he said, you're going to have to go through a lot. You're going to feel forsaken. You're going to feel like you didn't get your part. One for you, none for me. Think about that. You instantly, you can tell when you feel like you're not getting your share. But the moment we want to do is we want to even it up. Somehow I didn't get enough. We want to, you know, we're cutting the pie and we really measuring. We want to make sure we pour the stuff in the glass. We looking at it. Is it even? That's what we ask. But Yeshua never done any of that. He was not that way. If you pour it in a glass and it came up where he just had a little bit or none, he didn't say anything. But we have a tendency, we for some reason in our life, who we claim is under God's control, that if we come up short, we have to be defended. We want to know why, God, but David didn't do that. He didn't say, okay, Lord, you asked me to do this. Now, why are you letting this guy say all this stuff about me? You know, he said, hey, if Yahweh bid him, let him say on. If Yahweh bid him, who am I to fight Yahweh? He must know. He's got to know. I'm a praising. Regardless, I'm a praising. Matthew 26, verse 63. But Yeshua held his peace. And the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by the living Elohim that thou tell us whether thou be the Messiah, the Son of Yahweh. Well, he was getting on him. You know what Yeshua did? He just held his peace. You want me. See, they were baiting him. They were baiting him into an argument. They were baiting him into some fight. And he didn't buy into it. They put him on public display for everybody. He was humiliated in front of everybody. Think about that. Our Savior humiliated in front of everybody. And it's amazing. You know what? When they come and got him out of the garden? Remember what he said? He said, it's amazing you come at night with your sticks and your staff. He said, but I was amongst you every day and nobody come got me. You come at me with your chains like I'm a criminal or something. Think about that. It was to get them to think about what they were doing. He said, you think I'm running from you or hiding? Not in hiding. I was out there every day with you. You did nothing. Matthew 27. Verse 12, and when he was accursed of the when he was accused of the chief priests and the elders, he answered nothing. Remember that he was accused of the chief priest. Now these were no slouches; these were the heads of the church, the heads under Moses' law. We're talking about the chief priest. These were the guys that everybody looked to for everything. They conducted Torah portions. They conducted feast days. They were very heavily involved. They were no slouches. Let's talk about these chief priests. He was accused of the chief priests. Now watch, and the elders. So the chief priests, the elders, they were all on the same team. You know what he did? He said nothing. Think about that. You standing there and your person who has feelings, You get hurt. It's all real. Don't try to fake it. We don't have to be tough guys. It's real. But he said nothing. He felt everything you feel. He felt isolated, left, lied on, cheated on, and he said nothing. Wow. How does this happen? Meekness. Is it meekness, weakness? Remember that. Is meekness, weakness? Think about that. Are we used to the hand? Do we still retain strength? He was showing such strength here. God could see his strength. There was nobody stronger than he was who can endure everything he endured and said nothing. That's strong. Then said Pilate unto him, "Hearest thou not how many things these witness against thee?" Do you hear them? Now, here's Pilate. He's looking at Yeshua and he said, "Don't you hear what all these people are saying? These are your people. This is your people saying it." It's one thing for your neighbor or some distant friend to say something about you. But if it's your mama and your daddy, your husband and your wife or your children saying those things about you, do you understand? This is what he's up against. Pilate's saying, "This is your people saying this. Don't you hear them? How many things they witness against thee?" He's asking this question. And verse 14 says, "And he answered him to never a word." Not a word. "Insomuch that the governor marveled greatly." He said, "Man, this guy right here is teaching me something. Because if it had been me, heads would have been bouncing." Because he was a man of authority. You got to understand, the governor, he had put many people to death. This was nothing to him. He said, "They come up here and clown on me, they'll take them out back and just kill them. We'll light them on fire." And Romans, that's what they were. They were brave. They didn't care. They were brutal. If you didn't file a suit, you was like a candle burning in the night. That's just the way they were. So Pilate's going, "You know what?" He marveled greatly. He said, "Man, I'm gonna tell you what, I'm getting mad for him. If you ain't gonna get mad, I'm gonna get mad for you. You got nothing to do with me, but I'm so struck by this. Your own people." What did Yeshua do? Nothing. Why? He was having to make sure he operated in meekness. Meekness is opposed to anger. Meekness is opposed to anger. Ecclesiastes 7:9 says, "Do not be quickly provoked in your spirit." What does that mean? Don't get mad so fast. Do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. So if you easily get angry, you didn't have to go find that way back yonder in some deep cupboard of your life. It was sitting in your lap. How do we know that? Because that's what the Bible says. It sits on your lap. Boy, I got to work on this. Like, I got to really work on this, right? If I get mad fast, where was anger at? Sitting in my lap. Just kind of crossing my hair saying, "When we going to get mad? It's going to be today sometime. I know, we waiting on it. And any moment now, somebody going to look at us wrong, say the wrong thing, and we just can't wait because we going to get mad." Anger resides in the lap of fools. What does God say? That's foolish to be that way. To get irate before you even thought about it. Can we work on it? We should. We should try and say, God, you know what? I need to work on that. Because let me tell you, you might as well pat them because they're sitting on your lap right now. Rock them. You understand? So at least we have to say, you know what? I'm going to work on this because I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that away. I'm going to read it again. Do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. Ecclesiastes 7:9. The angry man is like gunpowder. No sooner do you touch him, but he is all on fire. That's what happens with gunpowder. It's just gunpowder. But boy, if you put just a little bitty spark by it, what happens? Do we feel like we're that way sometimes? How can we work on it? Fruit of the Spirit. Lord, help us that we do it. We got to work on it every day, and we got to be conscious of it. And when we don't, when we do explode, we got to say, why did I do that? How can I stop doing this? And you get better at it. How many want to be better? Messiah was meek. Matthew 11:29. Yet zealous. There's a difference. Now, we're going to talk about these two because I want you very versed in the difference between meekness and yet zealous. John 2:14-15. The zeal of Elohim's house ate him up. Let's look at it together. Matthew 11:28. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. What does he call it? A yoke. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me. Wow. Think about that. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me. For I am meek and lowly in heart. What a great description. What does he say? I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest for your souls. Now, that's a very important statement because the way we describe this scripture is read to people who's just going through something. Maybe they're going through something. They're having a rough time in their life. This is dealing with much more than that. This is dealing with... We already yoked up. We yoked up to the world. We yoked up to our sin. But he says, take that yoke off and put my yoke on. What is a yoke for? What are your yoke animals for? Maybe some of you have never seen this, but we've seen yokes. In Nepal, they put yokes on water buffalo. And there'll be two of them yoked together. And they're just walking down the road. There's not one going the other way. You yoked up, you going that way. If they're going anywhere, they're all going in the same direction at the same time. That's what yokes do. So what they'll do, they'll put yokes on them. And we've passed by and there'd be a yoked up oxen or a water buffalo, and they'd be treading out the rice, just going in a circle like that. There'd be a little kid or something with a switch, and he'd be snapping on them, and they'd just be yoked up. They're all going in the same direction. Well, how is it that they go in the same direction? They're yoked together. They're yoked up. A lot of times I find this to be true, is we want to go with God, but we don't want to yoke with God. We don't mind being around God. We don't mind being in the vicinity of God, but we don't want to be yoked up with God, because if we get yoked up with God, we got to go in His direction. It ain't you getting to choose no more. Notice what he says. Take my yoke. Let me ask you this question. Does Yeshua have a yoke? This is way deeper than folks just having trouble. Oh, man, I'm just going to cast my cares on him. He's going to care for me, and his yoke is easy. Think about it. He says, you got to get hooked up with me. If I'm going this way, you ought to be going this way. If I stop, you stop. Boy, that's a lot of lessons to learn just in that simple verse there. Why does he say, take my yoke upon you and learn of me? He said, for I am meek and lowly in heart. I'm meek and lowly in heart. So, you know what you do is you take a water buffalo that's been seasoned, been through something, been accused and made it, been laughed at and did all that stuff. You take somebody who's been through something. They seasoned. They've been through it. They've been crucified and been buried and rose again. You understand? We talk about Yeshua here. And then you yoke up with him somebody who hadn't been through anything. And that's how you learn. You learn because that seasoned one, you know, you might not want it. You might be pulling on the yoke like that. What's wrong with that one? Well, that one's getting trained. But that big one is going. And that other one, it don't matter. You could get drugged or you come on. But we going. Now, sometime I'm preaching like there's 1,000 people in the house. Because a point is a point. It don't make a difference how many people's there. It's a point that's true. Let me just tell you, you can get drug along, or you can just say, you know what? I might as well learn today how to walk in this yoke. Because I can see he ain't stopping. Let me just tell you, Yeshua ain't stopping for nobody. And that's what's happened. If you feel left because you stopped, he didn't stop. You got to get with the program. He's yanking on us. And let me tell you, that yoke, it'll get painful the more you resist it. And that young buffalo, he's resisting it, but he might as well, after a while, he is marching along like that. He done figured it out. There ain't nothing I can do. If I'm going to be on this team, we got to do what this team does. Boy, if we'd only operate our society like that again, huh? Folks on the team, and if they want to sit out, they can, because we want to be fair to everybody. But what about the other guys that are working like so hard, like they've never worked before, and how is one person going to stop the whole group? That ain't no team. That's called nonsense. And let me tell you, Yeshua's not going to stop. We can get take his yoke and get hooked up with him and do what he asks us to do or not. It doesn't matter to him. He gave his life, and if that don't mean nothing to you and I, when I think about it, it makes a weeping moment come on me when I think about how much he put up with so I get a chance. Find meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest for your soul. Let me tell you. We got no rest for our soul outside of if we don't take the yoke of Yeshua. No rest. Only thing you got coming is torment forever. Think about that. No rest for your soul. For my yoke is easy. Notice that. Now, at the beginning, it's not. You know why we don't think it's easy? Because it got different regulations and different rules and different, you got demands. Before, I didn't have no demand on my life. I do what I want. Listen, remember, doing what you want is what got you where you are. I'm doing what I want. But you get yoked up with him, and that's what I find the church has failed in, is we don't tell people enough that when you come and get saved, you know, when you come up here, anybody want to be saved? I do, okay? Everybody close your eyes, bow your head, nobody looking around. I'm holding my wallet. I mean, if nobody looking around, somebody coming around to take something. I want to see. If you're the only one with eyes open. Listen, we ought to tell folks, listen, heads up, eyes open. Are you ready for the yoke? Are you ready to get hooked up and go his way, when he goes, how he goes? There ain't no say this little prayer. What does that get you? You cry a little bit? Listen, I'm talking about yoking up with him, and when it's time to pull, we pull together. When it's time to plow, we plow together. When it's time to plant, we plant together. All this stuff will preach, won't it? His yoke is easy and his burden is light. John chapter 2, starting with verse 13, and the Jewish Passover was at hand, and Yeshua went up to Jerusalem and found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves and the changers of money sitting. And when he had made a scourge of small cords, I'm just wondering, and listen, he made one. I'm thinking, he's walking around and he's pulling up some leather. He's got him a handle and he's just tying it together. Because he's meek and lowly in heart. Remember that. Think about him. This is the stuff I think about when I read this. I'm like, and he what? And he made a scourge of small cords. He's getting it ready. And he drove them out of the temple and the sheep and the oxen and poured out the money, poured out the changers' money and overthrew the tables. We talk about this meek and lowly in heart. Now that's the guy. See, we want that Yeshua. If you read it and let's go get him, that's the one you want. And he said unto them that sold the doves, take these things hence, and make not my father's house a house of merchandise. Now notice what he was defending. What was he defending? His father's house. He's defending his father's house. This is the difference between the meekness, don't get, and the being zealous. And there was a good point that's been made here. Very good point that we have to make sure we look at. Verse 17. And his disciples remembered, when they saw him do this, what did they remember? They remembered that it was written. It is written. Don't get all flustered here because we got this meek and mild and gentle Jesus beating the tar out of people with cords. Flipping tables. I mean, it's a maniac. Let me tell you, if I went in a place and started doing this, folks would go, what is wrong with him? But I wonder who would remember it's written. The zeal of the house has eaten me up. I'm so involved in your house. I'm so locked in that it's your house. What does that mean? Your rules. I stepped over the covenant. I came into covenant with the Father. And what his rules is his rules. And I'm going to defend those rules with everything in me. Up to his life. Notice that. It got to his life. So that's why he said, the zeal of thine house is eating me up. I'm ate up with it. You ever been passionate about stuff that you get ate up with it? Mm-hmm. I've seen folks get ate up with stuff that don't make a hill. No sense whatsoever. They ate up with it. When it's time, they in it. 100% wide open in it. Well, let me just tell you, that's what Yeshua was when he came to the house of God. He was ate up with it. And I'm going to tell you, if we could just get that. When it comes to serving the Lord, here's a good one, you ready for this? Church attendance. Get eat up with it. Folks talking about they tired. Tired? That's like a little kid running around that's 5 years old and saying, I'm tired. Tired of what? Being a little kid? You don't know nothing about being tired. Try going out 5 days a week. You understand what I'm saying, though? No? Tired? Are you kidding me? Bah! You're tired right there. That's what you want to do. I might be talking too out loud. That's what I want to do here sometime. Zeal of thine house has eaten me up. I'm telling you, this is passion. Yeshua walked in that place and he was so caught up in his father's house. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. And they were treating it like some den of thieves. It was merchandising God's house, selling these things at, because the people knew they had to get it. It was there. And they had to buy it to get it to the priest to sacrifice it. And they were up the money and everything. He said, are you serious? What about my father's house being a house of prayer? When did you come here to really dedicate your life to him? But instead, there was something else. We need that zeal. So there's still, listen, you could be meek, but there's room for the zeal. And that's what he's saying. Because meekness is not weakness. And that's proven right there. When it came time for this stallion to show his strength, he just made that cord. He wrapped all them little leather straps together and just waiting for his time. I just want to know, he comes to the first table and they're just looking at him. Hey, that's Yeshua. That's Yeshua. That's Mary's boy. He's been going around doing nice things for people. And he's just waiting for his chance. He gets to that, just looking like that. Get to that first table. And all of a sudden, whoo. It'll shock you. Sometimes folk need shocking. I think I'm getting in my shocking mode. After you do it a while, you go, okay. And I've been doing this for a long time. One plus one is two. 30 years later, hey, what's one plus one? See? That we should never do that. Why do that when God says, why don't we want to retain it? Quit resisting and just walk with the yoke. It's easy. It's light. You'll find rest for your soul. Who wants that? You don't know how bad you want it until it's your turn. How many want rest for your soul when it's your turn? How many know what that means? When they drag that box in here, that's called your turn. You want rest for your soul. That's what they all tell me they want it. You up? They all up in here, the whole crowd, and they want you to say something that's nice. Don't wait for your turn. Because it's coming. Why don't we serve him? Why don't we live for him? Why don't we get excited about it? Look around. Ain't a person in here don't know somebody that's could have been here. No, zero, no excuse. Very important. Psalms, go to Psalms. Let me see if I could, what time is it? I'll finish Psalms. Let me do Psalms. Then we're going to quit. I really need to, let me see. Oh, I'm going to finish. Because I'm doing hunger and thirst in the morning. Psalm 69. Psalm 69. I don't know. We might not finish. It's a big old chapter. For Psalms, anyway. Psalm 69. We're talking about having this zeal and all of these wonderful things that God wants us to have. He says in Psalm 69, save me, O Elohim, save me, for the waters are come in unto my soul. Now, there's a crisis. Save me, O Elohim, for the waters have come in to my soul. I sink in deep mire, where there is no standing. I am coming to deep waters where the floods overflow me. You think about this. When I was going over this chapter, I was like, man, this will sink deep in right here. This will get you to thinking. He said, I'm trying to stand, but there is no bottom. Where I'm at, there is no bottom. There's no standing. When you stand, there's a confidence that comes over you called self-confidence. But if you're out in the ocean and you ain't got no bottom, what would really make you happy is some bottom. You'd feel different about yourself. But when you don't have no bottom, what do you feel like? I need help. Oh, God, do I need help? This is what he's saying. There's no standing where I'm at. I need you more than anything. Save, and he starts out with that 69, first word, save me, O Elohim, for the waters have come or come in unto my soul. I sink in deep mire where there is no standing. I am coming to deep waters where the floods overflow me. I am weary of my crying. My throat is dry. My eyes fail while I wait for my Elohim. This is describing a guy that's had it. He's had it. We got to get back to these moments where we recognize ourselves in this condition. When's the last time your eyes were weary and your throat was dry because you call upon the Lord? He says, they that hate me without a cause are more than the hairs of my head. Hate me without a cause, or more than the hairs of my head. They that would destroy me, being mine enemy, wrongfully or mighty, then I restored that which I took not away. Think about that. O Elohim, thou knowest my foolishness, and my sins are not hid from thee. Let not them that wait on thee, O my sovereign Yahweh of hosts, be ashamed for my sake. Let not those that seek thee be confounded for my sake, O Elohim of Israel. Because for thy sake I have borne reproach. Shame had covered my face. I am become a stranger unto my brethren and an alien unto my mother's children. For the zeal of thine house had eaten me up. That's where it was written. For the zeal of thine house has eaten me up. Think about that. So there was this separation, a recognizing of his condition, a complete separation, alienation from his own family. For what reason? The zeal of thine house has eaten me up. I'm going all in with you. If I'm going to have nothing, it's going to be nothing. But I one thing for sure, I'll lose everything this world has to offer, including my family. But God, the zeal of your house has eaten me up. That's where they got that from. Think about that. So I wanted to read that to you. Really, the whole chapter. You need to take the whole chapter in because it's absolutely incredible, Psalm 69. But I wanted to point that out to you. Hopefully you'll take some time to look at it. Ephesians 4, verse 26 through 27. Ephesians 4, verse 26. Be ye angry and sin not. There's that meekness. Sin not is the meekness. Don't pass over into sin. But being angry is the zeal has eaten me up. You got to stand for what's right. You don't give in to nonsense. You stand for what's right, but you don't go overboard where you sin. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. Why you got to be so careful? Because the devil's waiting to see if you go over. If you do, you're going to give him place. Positions everything. Don't give place to the devil. He wants to take that spot from you, and you can forfeit that spot. Whatever it is, just by one time, showing out. Ephesians chapter 2, verse number 1. And you hath he quickened who were dead in trespasses and sin, wherein in times past, this is what happened when? Times past. Not now. Times past. We walked, times past, you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince and power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience, among whom also we all had our conversation in times past, in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. Verse 4, but Yahweh, I mean, thank God for that. But Yahweh, who is rich in mercy, for his great love wherewith he loved us, even when we were dead in sin, he quickened us together with Messiah. With Messiah means we got the yoke, we're yoked together with Messiah. You can't be quickened to God if Messiah is not next to you. Why? He's the lead. He's the one, as I'm being trained, he's the one that's training. That's how you become a Christian, being Christ-like. I want to be like him. Right? What would that have something that was out, I want to be like Mike? You know, that went on for a while. What about being like Christ? You can't ever be like Mike unless you put the time in, the necessary time. It just don't happen because you tall. It don't happen because you're a good person. So we got a lot of people who meet qualifications that look similar but never reach it because you got to know what they've been through to get where they're going. You know what, Yeshua, he didn't open his mouth. He was like dumb. Nobody wants to be called dumb, you dummy. Nobody wants that. It gets under your skin. So it's okay for Yeshua to be dummy, but I ain't going to be no dummy. I ain't going to be nobody's dummy. But Yeshua was fine, right? Think about that. Sometimes the best position you got and the safest position you got is to be dumb to what you're hearing. Remember what? Be deaf to what you hear. Act like you didn't even hear it. Because the moment you respond on what you heard, they got you. You didn't act the way God wanted you to act. So if that still small voice comes and says, you didn't hear that, you go, that's exactly right. Oh, you can answer God this way. Heard what, Lord? You knew good well you heard it, but you just go right along with him. Heard what? You right, and you go on. It's not easy, but that's what he's requiring of us. Even when we were dead in sin, had he quickened us together with Messiah by grace, so you say, and had raised us up together and made us sit together in heavenly places in Messiah Yeshua. You know what keeps you together? A yoke. A yoke. So you're going to get trained together, you're going to be buried together, you're going to be raised together, you're going to be lifted to the heavenlies together. That's what it just said. Very, very valuable to our life. Verse 7, that in the age to come he might show the exceeding riches of his grace and his kindness toward us through Messiah Yeshua. He's going to show this great kindness. For by grace are you saved through faith. It's not of yourself. It's the gift of Yahweh. The gift of Yahweh. Think about that. So we'll stop there. Is there more meekness? Sure. We can go on and on and on about meekness, because I covered some high points. But when I share with you, these are all preaching points. There's points in here. There's 7-8 messages just tonight that you could take off on and just preach on those points, especially that being yoked with him. Man, that's a powerful message in there. You can go on in that, elaborate on that. But let me just tell you, this whole series is critical to our life. Poor in spirit, mourning over our sins, Learn how to be meek. Our meekness toward to God is important. And then, of course, hungering and thirsting for righteousness. All of these first four are very important because that's what we do toward him. And toward him, the residual effect is toward man. But all of these, who in here thinks you can show God mercy? These are all toward man. All of these. Pure in heart. Well, God, let me show you. You want to see pure in heart. Let me tell you, Lord, just look at it. It don't get much better than this. Are you kidding me? This is not toward God. Do you understand that? Peacemaker. Well, Lord, next time you get mad, what you got to do is be a peacemaker like me. Doesn't that sound silly? All you got to do is try these on and see how they fit. You doing them toward God. Persecuted for righteousness' sake. Think about that. These are all toward man. These are toward God. They have a residual effect because you're going to have it's going to show toward man. But its primary purpose is toward God because that's the thing we got to learn. How many want that? So hungering and thirsting for righteousness has a residual effect. You get blessed by doing it. But how do you step into it? It's toward Elohim, toward him. And that's what we'll talk about in the morning. Hunger and then thirsting for righteousness shall be what? Filled. Shall be filled. So I appreciate you tonight. Thank God for you. Thank God for your time here. We do apologize again for the overhead. We ordered everything at the same time, and something's on back order for the filter, so it won't be in. Probably not going to have it till hopefully next week.